Welcome to the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley, psychology student and international best-selling psychology author of over 30 psychology books, bringing you the latest psychology news, fascinating psychology topics and more each week. If you want to learn more, then please check out connorwhiteley.net/books. And don't forget to like and subscribe to the YouTube video or follow on your favourite podcast app. And here's the show. Hi everyone and welcome to episode 237 of the Psychology World podcast with me, Conor Whiteley. And today's episode is on how can therapists and parents support transgender teenagers. So this is a great episode that I've really enjoyed, and there's a very specific reason why I'm actually going to do this episode today of all days, and it is the 11th of November 2023 as I record this. So the week that I record this, or to be honest, the week this podcast episode comes out, as I should probably say, is that it's Transgender Awareness, because I wanted to do my part to show see a port and to help to increase awareness about this specific group of people. And even if you are not a parent, even if you're not really a mental health professional, or even though if doubt that you will ever see a transgender client, to be honest, this is still a really useful podcast episode, just so we can understand what parents go through when their child comes out as like transgender, and also the horrific mental health consequences of if a teenager is not supported. And that's the real reason for today's episode, just to highlight that teenagers have to be supported, otherwise the risk of suicide, depression and self-harm are ridiculously increased. So what you've got to look forward to in the content part of today's episode. So moving on to the psychology news section, we're reading from the British Psychological Society Research Digest. And the first one is, breaking the cycle of negativity may help land a new job. Looking for a new job, particularly after losing your previous one, can be a slog of writing applications, endless interviews, and seemingly constant rejections all take a psychological toll. Adding to the other mental health impacts of unemployment, in a cruel twist, the negative outlook this creates often poses barriers to people finding work, creating a vicious cycle. In their recent paper, Julian Profrenbeck and colleagues look at how this cycle could be broken. Whilst landing a new gig is a complex, time-consuming process that often requires a lot of hard work, the team's findings suggest that taking a break for self-affirmation, in this case reflecting on important values, could be a useful technique for job seekers to add to their arsenal. Across two studies, participants in a struggle to reflect on their values found employment faster than at the controls. Okay, so that's a really interesting and a really useful take for all of us, because I know after my clinical psychology master's, so that ends in September, I think I'm going to attempt to start applying for assistant psychologist positions in August onwards, maybe even July onwards, on the a vague chance that I can actually get employed just before my degree finishes. Well, I know that that's going to be hard, I know it's going to be difficult, and that will probably be quite a soul-destroying process. But again, though, I think that if we learn little tips, then that's going to be really valuable, especially really simple tips like this one. For example, just taking a little break for ourselves, just so we can focus on ourselves and say to ourselves that we are good enough for, and we can just reflect on our values. For example, for me, I would say I want to say what my values would be: helping people, working in a supportive place. I really don't know, because I've not thought about this very much, but just those sort of things. So whatever your values are, focus on them, reflect on them, and try and use them in your job hunt, and hopefully that will make it a lot less soul-destroying. So the second one is, refuge mental health beyond high-income countries. It's easy to imagine that refugees are more likely to experience depression, anxiety and PTSD. Research shows this is the case time and time again. However, much of this research focuses on refugees to higher income countries, despite the fact that they're much more likely to live in a lower or middle income country. And before I actually continue with the news article though, if you ever want to actually know the truth about the refugee numbers, actually go and look at the UN, because they like log it all. And if like a memory serves, Turkey takes the most refugees in the entire world, and that is not a high income country, so they take about 1.7 million. And then it's a few European countries, but the UK doesn't even break the top 10 in terms of how many the UK takes in, which I think is quite funny considering the propaganda that the UK is filled with. So we're going back to the article. The information we have about the mental health of refugees is therefore likely to be skewed, and may only paint a partial picture of mental health amongst those seeking a safer place to call home. Harvard's Julius R. Pursar and team sought to address this bias with their latest research project by exploring the experiences of refugees in three East African countries, Kenya, Uganda, and Ethiopia. So even though I'm actually not going to click on the article and actually look at it itself, I do recommend that you actually go on the BBS Research Digest website if you're interested. But the entire point of this research is really true, and it's really very important though, because I think in the West, because of politics, because of our society and because of our cultures, I think that it's very easy to think that refugees only come to higher income countries, or countries though, but to be honest, most of them actually don't, or most of them don't actually come to the countries that we typically think about. For example, Turkey, I mentioned, because it's the first safe country that they travel through. So I think it's great that we are starting to recognise this bias in the literature, and we're trying to readdress it. We'll readdress it. But now that this team from Harvard University has actually started to focus on this more, hopefully other people will start to focus on it too. And in the future, we'll be able to get a better, much more complete picture about what is the mental health impact of being a refugee. So the last one is, elsewhere on the web. Last week, the American Psychological Association, for the first time ever, released recommendations for addressing race, ethnicity and culture in psychological research. Despite much discussion, samples typically seen in psychology research seem weird. Western, educated, industrialized, rich and democratic as ever. While these publication guidelines are a step in the right direction, there's still a lot of work to be done, both in enforcing these recommendations and in other parts of the research and publishing ecosystem. So I think it's really interesting that it's taken us years, to be honest, probably quite a few decades. I had to do a little bit of research into weird cultures for a piece of coursework last year, and I think I managed to get some quite older research mentioning weird. So I think it's bad it's taken us this long to actually get some sort of recommendation to sort of counter it, but I think it'd be interesting to see if this actually changes anything, even remotely, because the APA, they can put out all this stuff, they can put out all this content and these recommendations, but unless they're enforced, or unless universities and journals actually take them on board, then nothing's going to change, and then we're still going to get very westernised research. So that completely fails to look at human behavior across cultures and see does a lot of the psychological concepts that Western psychology relies on, does it actually replicate across cultures? So I think it'd be interesting. I think that these publication guidelines are great and I really welcome them, but it'd be interesting to see what happens next. What is the next step? Will the journal start coming out left, right and centre, accepting them and actually reinforcing them or not? So, I don't know, it'd be interesting and definitely food for thought. So, I hope you enjoyed the psychology news section. So, let's move on to the personal update. So, we're moving on to the personal update. So, this week has been very busy. It's been filled with quite a lot of like good stuff. For example, like lectures, helping out a friend like when they come on a trail group, and my own like research, which is a which we should be able to submit for ethics next week, which I'm quite excited about that. But I did have a really good lecture like this week, which to be honest probably surprised everyone in the lecture because everyone knows in the class I am not that fussed by social psychology, and everyone knows I'm literally there because I had to take it as an optional module. Because it was the best of a bad bunch, to be honest. Everyone knows that. And if someone looked at me during this social psychology lecture, they would suspect I wasn't hanging on to every word because I'm on my laptop doing other bits and pieces from time to time. But to be honest, I actually am. So whenever I make a contribution, people are quite surprised because they don't expect that. But this week in my social psychology lecture, we were looking at systems justification theory, which is something I've been wanting to look at for ages, and I simply haven't got around to it. So that was really interesting. It was really interesting to see why people justify the systems that disadvantage them, and they continue to support these systems. So I think it was really interesting, and I really do love that topic. But I do actually have a request for all of you. If any of you know our studio, if any of you have some good resources to help me learn it, can you guys please send it to me? Because I am, to be honest, I'm happy to admit, well, I'm not happy, but I can admit when I'm struggling. And our studio is definitely one of those, because the problem that I'm finding is that even though we are master's students, basically none of us have ever done our studio before. We all did SPSS, which for people that don't know, it was this wonderful statistics software that was basically one click function. So you would click the button that said that you wanted to run an ANOVA, you would put in your variables, you would click done, and it would be done. There was no coding rubbish, there was no anything. So we all knew that, and we all taught that from an undergrad level. So we knew the basics, and then the more advanced stuff was built on top of that. But for masters, they aren't teaching us R from a basic level. So even if there's a coding error, I have no idea where to start to try and correct it. So if any of you have some good R resources, I would be extremely grateful if you could please send them to me. And I will mention how you can send them to me if you want in a minute. And as always, I always love to know your thoughts and feelings on today's episode. So you can always email me, ConnorWhiteley@ConnorWhiteley.net. You can always leave a comment at the show notes at ConnorWhiteley.net/podcast. And you can always tweet me on Twitter at SciFiWhiteley. I always love to hear from all of you because it really helps make the podcast feel more like a conversation. And you can also leave a comment on the Facebook post at Connor Whiteley, psychology author. And today's episode has been sponsored by Suicide Psychology, a social psychology, cognitive psychology and neuropsychology guide to suicide. So this is a great sponsor for today's episode because as you've seen this episode, if a transgender teenager is not supported, then the chance of them committing suicide or at least attempting to commit suicide is dramatically increased compared to non-transgender youth. So this great, really easy to understand book actually breaks down a lot of the myths and misconceptions about suicide, because there are so many, and I hate those myths because those myths are very lethal in themselves. You also get to learn that a suicidal person, they don't want to die at all. They actually just want someone to listen to them. So it actually explores in quite a lot of like detail about why that's the case. But then it also talks about the neurological and the cognitive processes that can actually contribute to a suicide. So this great book actually goes into so much detail that I really do recommend it. Especially if you want to deepen your understanding about suicide, and if you actually want to learn the truth about it. Because as I said, there are so many really dangerous misconceptions that actually do so much more harm than good. So that is Suicide Psychology, a Social Psychology, Cognitive Psychology and Neuropsychology Guide to Suicide. Available from all major ebook retailers, and you can order the paperback and the hardback version from Amazon, your local bookstore or local library if you request it. So whilst buying books helps to support the creation and the editing of the podcast, my time is sponsored by my wonderful patrons. And as always, a massive thank you to my wonderful patrons, because your support shows that you like the show and you want it to continue. So if you wanted to become a patron and get great rewards, then you can at patreon.com/psychologyworldpodcast. So that's enough of the personality. Let's move on to the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the content part of today's episode. So we're going to be talking about how therapists and parents can support transgender teenagers. So this is a great episode, really important for mental health professionals, the mental health of the teenagers themselves, and basically everyone there, where just we can deepen our knowledge, increase our empathy, and just be aware during this awareness week. So let's dive into it. Structure of this podcast episode. I want the majority of this podcast episode to be aimed at parents, because I want them to understand and learn why it is important to support their teenager after identity disclosure, as well as I want to offer them a lot of practical and very unofficial tips and ways to affirm their teenager's identity, so we can hopefully prevent the large amount of negative mental health outcomes like suicide, depression and self-harm. However, the reason why I'm talking about this topic on my psychology podcast, where most of my audience members are psychology students, younger people and clinical psychologists, is because this is a critical for current or future therapists to understand, since both parents and teenagers will probably need psychological support during this time, and it is always useful to read this apparent information, as this helps us to understand and empathise with what the parent has experienced before they come to us. Additionally, if someone in your psychology workplace comes out as trans, or even if you make a transgender friend, it is always useful to know how to support and affirm their gender identity. Why is supporting transgender teenagers important? A lot of research has been done over the years on transgender mental health and the awful consequences of trans people not living in a supportive environment. For example, Exburn et al. 2017 found roughly 66% of transgender teenagers have had suicidal thoughts, as well as this is supported by They All and All 2016, who found 65% of 14 to 18 year olds have had serious thoughts of ending their own lives, and this is extremely concerning, because only 13% of cisgender teenagers considering ending their own lives during the same time period. Therefore, therapists and other physical and mental health professionals who work with transgender teenagers can attestify that having supportive parents is an extremely positive game changer for teenagers, and there is research to support this argument too. For instance, TransOppose 2012 conducted research and found the following. Transgender teenagers with supportive parents had 72% life satisfaction compared to only 33% for teens with unsupportive parents. 64% of teens with supportive parents had high self-esteem compared to only 13% for those without parental support. 70% of supported transgender teens had excellent mental health compared to only 15% of unsupported teens. And finally, 100% of teens with supportive parents had a good housing compared to 45% of those lacking parental support. When it comes to the negative outcomes, only 23% of transgender teenagers with supportive parents again experienced the oppressive symptoms, compared to 75% of the teens without supportive parents. Also, only 4% of transgender teenagers with supportive parents attempted suicide in the past year, compared to 57% of teens without support. So, as you can see, if you don't have supportive parents, then the mental health outcomes are stark and quite extreme. Therefore, there is a lot of personal and research evidence that highlights how important parental support is for transgender teenagers. And this leads us to our next section and a question. How can parents show support for their non-binary or transgender teenager? Since it is only a tiny, tiny minority of people that ever have to come out about their gender, no one really understands what it's like. Therefore, whenever a teenager comes out about their gender identity, it is important to know that they are revealing an extremely important and very vulnerable part of themselves, and they are putting themselves in a very courageous and a scary place. Because this important part of themselves could be rejected. And personally, I would admit that this was very scary for me, because when I came out as a trans non-binary to my parents a few weeks ago, even though the relationship between my parents and myself is a lot better, healthier and greater, and as far as LGBT plus topics are concerned, this was still an extremely scary topic for me to reveal, and I had no idea what was going to happen. Thankfully, they accepted it, and they both lovingly support me. As a result, it is important to know how to affirm a transgender or non-binary person's gender identity to hopefully prevent some of those worrying mental health outcomes mentioned above. Therefore, here are some other ways to affirm a teenager's gender identity. Affirm their gender by using their affirmed gender's pronouns and names. And this is important because your transgender teenager would have likely spent a lot of time and emotional energy choosing their new name. So it might feel upsetting and it might feel strange to use a new name, but it will become easier over time. Help to prevent bullying, and when it happens, address it. Prevent and address any cruelty and harm aimed at your client or child. Allow your child to show you who they are and love your child fully. Help them access gender-affirming therapy and medical services. Work with your teenager's school to make sure that they use their affirming bathroom and there are affirming classroom practices in a place. For example, using the affirm or chosen name on school materials and the register. Help your teenager explore and progress in their social transition when they're ready for it. Other ways to affirm your teenager's gender identity. Another way to affirm your teenager's gender identity is to educate yourself. So you could listen to podcast episodes, like you're doing now, read books, watch videos, and more to help educate yourself about the topic. And even before I realised I was watching these videos and learning about the topic because I was trans myself, I have to admit it was a lot of fun. And this is a really, really interesting area. Furthermore, you will need to accept your own feelings, because it is perfectly okay to feel a sense of loss when your child makes a gender disclosure. Since parents do plan for their child to do X, Y, and Z as their gender assigned at birth. So that when this changes, your hopes, dreams, and your expectations change too. You might feel angry, overwhelmed, and confused about why this is happening, and I do get that. These are normal reactions, so please make sure that you process and that you deal with your own feelings. Make sure that you support your child. That is the most important thing during this entire process, especially if we want to avoid those mental health outcomes. Building upon this further, make sure that you listen to your family member in a non-judgmental way. Since transitioning is a difficult and it is a journey that takes a hell of a lot of courage, so please allow your teenager to be hopeful and guide you so you know what they need from you. In addition, it's important to know that there's no one right way to be trans, because not everyone's journey is the same. Yes, it is true that some people know they're trans ever since they were a small child, other people don't realise it until puberty, and others still don't realise it till much, much later. Personally, I only realised that I was trans non-binary because I haven't felt like a man for years, and then over the summer during my therapy work, it dawned on me that the reason why I don't feel like a man wasn't because of my abuse and my trauma, but because I just don't connect to a male or identity, and I'm just me. I'm not a man, certainly not a woman, just me. Also, some trans people might be militantly active about their gender identity, and some people might not. Like, I know some people that are very active about their gender identity, but I'm seriously not. I'm extremely passive about me being non-binary. So it's up to the teenagers to decide how they want to be trans and what being trans means to them. Finally, be happy for yourself and for your teenager, because yes, the transgender journey is hard. I will not lie about that for a moment. Yes, transitioning from a birth gender to who you really are is a hopeful, positive, and affirming thing that is amazing. So if you allow yourself to be happy for your teenager because they're finally being who they always wanted to be, then you'll find a lot of joy in the process too, as you see your child become happier, more authentic, and enjoy living their best life. Conclusion. Whether you're a parent or a therapist or both, and you have a transgender teenager, the most important thing that you can do for them is support them during this difficult time for them. The fact that they're transgender doesn't make life difficult. It is the world we live in that is going through a massive hating period towards transgender people, and it is that negative trans world that makes life difficult for trans people. Yet, the family home and the parental environment is the perfect place to offer a trans person love, support, and the protection that they have the right to feel. The same goes for the therapy room. Just like cisgender clients, whenever a trans person walks into a therapy room, whether they are for mental health difficulties related to being a trans or not, they deserve to feel and experience the same safety, security, and sense of welcome that all our other clients do. and that sense of security and safety and openness to be their all authentic self always starts up with their gender identity being affirmed. And after this podcast episode, you will now have a great starting point in knowing just how to do that. So I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode and you got something out of it. I know that because this is basically the first time I've ever spoken about this, sort of drawing on one or two bits of personal experience, I admit I did sort of wobble. Well, I didn't so much wobble, but it was hard sort of talking about this for the first time ever though. So it was interesting for me to write this. It was interesting for me to record it and actually say this stuff out loud. Because normally I've just had quite small conversations with friends, family, at like at different like social events. But it's something very different to actually put this out on a podcast, which is thankfully listened to all over the world by tons of different people and in tens upon tens of countries. So thank you, amazing listeners. But this is an important topic just so we can help prevent suicide, self-harm and depression, amongst all of the other negative mental health outcomes. So I hope you found today's episode useful. And if you know anyone else who will enjoy today's episode, then please share it with them. I'm always really grateful when wonderful people help spread the word about the podcast. And if you want to learn more, definitely check out suicide psychology, social psychology, cognitive psychology, and a neuropsychology guide to suicide, available in all the usual places. And if you want to become a patron of the show, then please go to patreon.com/thepsychologyworldpodcast. So have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. Please remember to like the video and subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow the podcast on your favourite podcast app. And if you wanted to learn more, then please check out the backlist of the podcast episodes or my books at conwhiteley.net. So have a great day and I'll see you next time.